Welcome to the Nameless InfoSec podcast. This is Sporus, and with me is...
BioShadow.
Just to introduce ourselves, a little bit about me. I'm into manga, anime, things like that. I'm a student of computer science, and I've been interested in InfoSec for a while, and I've been wanting to podcast for a while, so we're giving it a shot.
So. Like I said, name's BioShadow. I am new to the information security. Apparently, 2 years now, I am working for a web security company paid to break websites daily. So, I like long walks on the beach.
Long walks on the beach are always good. So.
Yeah.
So right now the name for the podcast is the Nameless InfoSec Podcast because we're too lazy to come up with a name. And what we're going to be doing is, you know, we're both new to InfoSec, and we figured we'd learn as, or everybody else would learn as we learn. So
yeah. So we noticed that there was this gap in podcasts where it was like the security now, where it's just like basic computer security, and then there's this gap where on the other side where it was really not really high technical, but really advanced stuff, but there was nothing for us newcomers. So we're trying to fill that void.
We'll be also filling a void on Hacker Public Radio by being one of the only InfoSec news shows on Hacker Public Radio currently. So, well, why don't we get right into, you know, current projects? What are you working on?
Currently, I am trying to broaden my web security knowledge. I'm very new to the space. I'm new to the genre. That's not even a good word either. Anyways, I'll just move on. And try to broaden my skills in there. And I'm also trying to actually get back into blog posts. And I'm also trying to learn Ruby, which is not going well.
Well, you'll have to teach me some Ruby later because I haven't worked on that at all. So currently I'm working on a kind of secret project that I'll hopefully be talking about at several conferences this year. Can't really talk about it much right now. Other than that, I'm just trying to learn a lot about as much about coding as I can because that's kind of where I see myself going. So. But I'm trying to work a lot with parallel programming, things like that. So I've been having some fun with Google Go.
Google Go.
Yeah. So it's that that Google programming language that they came out with last year. Have you looked at it?
Yeah, I looked at it when it came out. I haven't looked at it since, but it does look interesting.
Yeah, it's been growing pretty quickly, and it's easy to write in. So you want to get right on to the news?
Yeah, let's get right on to the news.
All right, why don't you take this first story?
First story coming from Royal Pingdom, pingdom.com's blog. They tore apart the semantic message labs intelligence report for 2010, and they pulled out a bunch of nuggets about email spam. You know, they found out that, you know, like 80, it's a 66 report, and they just pulled out all the nice nuggets of facts. Last year in 96% of spam was English, and it has gone down to 90%. So Symantec is rationalizing this as they're becoming more international rather than targeting us United States and Britain. They're hitting everybody now, which is pretty cool.
And something I found interesting in it was it talking about the spam botnets. So I've always been interested in the botnet thing. So.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. The 88% spam from botnets, talking about on average 77 spam messages are sent out per minute from a compromised bot. But some bots send out as much as 200 a minute. That's a lot of email.
So have you done any work with any botnet research yourself?
I attempted to do some when I was a field tech at a K-12. We had quite a few botnets, and there. So we looked at some, you know, we didn't get too deep, but we saw the traffic going to, you know, Eastern Europe and and China. Not very much China, as this blog post actually points out, is that not a lot of traffic goes to China.
I was going to mention the, if you look at the graphic on the blog post, it pretty much everything is in Europe. So,
yeah,
and not just Eastern Europe, like I would have thought, it's all over Europe.
Yeah.
But
and I thought
it's fairly centralized.
Yeah, I would have thought the U.S. would have been brighter, you know, like a darker color, but it's very, it's very not. And then Europe is just like, it's red. It's, it's kind of staggering.
It says China sends less than 0.5% of the global botnet spam. So I'd have thought it'd be a little bit more because they talk about how there's so many more computers in China now and people aren't protecting them and things like that. So
we, a roommate thought about, the comment was, well, the Great Wall of China, you know, the Great Firewall of China, maybe that's part of the reason. Maybe the internal spam is a lot higher, but the traffic that we actually see is lower. But that is very interesting that it's less than a percent.
That's an interesting observation. It makes a lot of sense. So, well, I mean, that's pretty much all for this post. It just talked about the different statistics with spam. It was an interesting read if you're interested in spam. So,
and they have a link to the full report that's 66 pages long. I downloaded it for later brain numbing.
Yeah, I'll have to put that on my Kindle later and check that one out. So,
you want to take this next story?
All right. So the next story is from Computer World. Hackers steal $150,000 with malicious job application. So it says that small businesses, there's a new scam where people wanting to hack their online bank accounts will apply for a job. It talks about an FBI report here. And they're calling it an ACH fraud or automatic clearinghouse fraud, where they install malicious software on the business's computer and use it to log into their bank account. This is an interesting approach. I had never heard of anything like this before seeing this article. So
yeah, I never thought about the fact that anyone's going to open but it makes sense. Like everyone's going to open job application. You know, to think about it, you know, even the larger companies, where do job application go to? HR, Sally and HR, and I bet you Sally doesn't think about viruses. So it's an interesting approach, and apparently it's working since they got $150,000. That's
right. I mean, really, the only way I can think of to combat this, I mean, if they're writing their own malware, different scanning software isn't going to pick it up, and so you'd have to put your HR department on a separate network, which, I mean, that makes sense, but for a small business, that's you know, something that's not very feasible. So
yeah, they, as always, the email that's sent out is very well, not well, I should say, written. They've got an example down here. It says, hello, I have figured out that you have an available job. I am quiet interested in it, so I send you my resume. Looking forward to your reply. Thank you. And SonicWall is also reporting that's only the Trojan that they found has only been around since last July. This game has been around at least 6 months, according to security vendor SonicWall, which reported the Trojan last July. Okay.
If this is something that anybody worried about, you know, different ways it mentions that you can work on it is delete the attachment and ask for a plain text version, or if you're using Gmail for your email, which I know a lot of businesses are with the Google Apps and things, you can open documents in Gmail to see if they're legitimate, and then, you know, all the risk is on Google's servers instead of on your own.
Which I know for a fact Google makes sure that there's no viruses on it.
Right. I mean, can you think of any other advice for people on how to deal with something like that?
I would say only open PDFs, but we've proven that PDFs aren't secure either. So,
right.
I mean, I can, the only thing I can think of is to only use it like maybe a separate computer, like an unsecured computer that's air gapped on the regular internal network, or opening it in Google, like you suggested. But yeah, that's a good one, so, because you can't not open job applications, especially if you're looking for employees.
I think that's good advice right there. So, do you want to take the next one?
Sure. Of course, I'm going to get this one. Apparently, there is a new virus called the Kama Sutra virus out there. Apparently, the Kama Sutra virus is being transferred in the form of a downloaded PowerPoint template or PowerPoint slideshow file link. And the presentation, which is actually an .exe file, is open. The users are, quote-unquote, treated to an, quote-unquote, illustrated Kama Sutra presentation. And in the background, the malicious code is installing some stuff, including, according to this blog post we have in front of us, or article, whatever, is downloading a backdoor of some kind. And it's installing some temp files, a batch file, two .exes, and it looks like they're installing something that they're calling acrobat.exe. So maybe a reader of some kind, but it looks pretty interesting. And no, there is no pictures on the blog post, for those that care. It is a family-friendly blog, apparently. So, no blog post, no pictures for you. But my guess is you could probably Google search. So, if you want those, go Google.
it's an interesting interesting virus. I mean, we don't see too many interesting viruses these days that are making it into the news. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like it used to be where people would open anything that got sent to them. So,
yeah, it looks,
well, some people still are, but
yeah, it looks like they actually put a true PowerPoint slide on there. So you're actually looking at a PowerPoint file, and in the background they're executing a system, registering for system start, and then changes the security settings at Internet Explorer, and then adds system files. So yeah, it's standard backdoor, but with an interesting, way to brain freeze. Interesting way to get someone to download it.
All I can say about this one is that I don't know, with some things, if you're the one whose job it is to clean the computers, it's an unlucky job. This one, you might appreciate it. So
just a tad.
Yeah. So, well, on to the next one. I'll take this one. Doncho Donchev, a zero-day blogger and malware researcher, he's been missing since August, and there's, you know, information coming out in the past few days showing that he's probably in some serious trouble. This article's on ZDNet, and they're talking about how nobody's been able to make contact with him. They've contacted Bulgarian authorities, and no one knows what happened to him. He apparently, an email was sent from him to a colleague of his saying that he was in some pretty deep trouble, and he sent some attached pictures. So ZDNet, they said they weren't sure how to proceed, and so they published the information so that maybe someone can shed some light on it. So if you have any information on it, they want you to contact them. They have an email, and we'll have a link to the post and to their email in the show notes. So, I mean,
yeah.
What do you think about this?
It's kind of scary. You know, he's in Bulgaria, so there's the fact that he's in Eastern Europe. So this isn't a U.S. citizen, for those that are freaking out about researchers disappearing in the U.S., which may or may not happen. I'm not going to discuss that part.
Right.
But it's
not something you think about happening over here, though. So
definitely not. And apparently he added some pictures from his apartment that he found a bug. I think he says, due to my clear... recommended me. No, he says something in here about having pictures of what the Bulgarian police and or intelligence agencies left him. And it's apparently a bug. I believe it was in his kitchen. No,
he says it's the current situation in his bathroom.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. In the bathroom, there's a. It looks like a box that's on the wall, and then he takes a picture of a some cabling, and it looks like some Cat 5 cabling, but I don't think that's
right. Maybe Cat 5, and then some RJ. What is it? 15. That's phone cable.
Yeah, so. It looks like his cable has been split and then rerun. So someone's, like, physically manning in the middle of them? I don't know.
It says that he thinks that it's actually the Bulgarian law enforcement that are doing this. So, and that's what makes it so scary is, you know, if it's organized crime or something, that's one thing. But when it's your own government, that makes it, you know, how do you fight something like that? So
outside help. I mean, you know, he's clearly, you know, he says in his blog, they're trying to damage his reputation for the last year and a half because of his pro-Western views, you know,
right.
And, you know, and there's that. I mean, no one's coming. I think another article on Wired said that Wired was able to talk to some people that can't tell us where he is or what he's doing, but there is something going on that is not good for him. So, We don't know if that means something with the Bulgarian government or if it's the mob mafia, whatever they want to call themselves now. But
whoever it is, I mean, all we can do right now is hope that somebody does have some information to shed on it, and you know, hope that he does come out okay in the end. So
yeah,
but that's kind of a scary thing to think about. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's because he's a malware researcher. It sounds like it's more about his other views, but I mean, that, you know, you think about it, there's, you know, I've been reading some different things about the computer underground in the late 80s, early 90s, and I mean, there's things where it seems like any government might want to get rid of you being in computer research just because you might know too much.
Yeah.
So
you listen to, read the wrong forum, and you find out that Bulgarians or government's writing this or that, and
right, or
then you
or hack into the wrong system,
yep.
So
drop into the wrong CNC server. Yeah, it's not good.
All we have to say is don't hack the military from your home connection. So
proxies are your friend, and if you do know anything, please help in any way you can. I don't think they care if they know who you are. They just want information. So
yep. We'll have links to that one and all the others in the show notes. So you want to grab the next one? So.
Sure. We got smartphone hacking highlights more GSM woes. If GSM wasn't broken enough. Apparently this article came out today, a couple hours ago when we record this, which is the 19th, out of Black Hat DC. Some European research today showed that how bugs he discovered in the baseband chipset firmware of iPhone and Android smartphones could be exploited to ultimately take control of these devices. Apparently, he can intercept phone calls, SMS, and in some cases the GPRS, which is the General Packet Radio Service, and Edge, depending on what hardware. Says that
right.
He can use. He's out of University of Luxembourg, if that means anything. Turns out.
It sounds like it's. You know, they specifically mentioned the iPhone and Android, but looking through the article, it sounds like it's more because of GSM than because of the iPhone or Android. So potentially, more phones are susceptible to this.
Yeah, it's not.
Is that kind of what you're talking?
Yeah, it's not specific hardware. It's not specific OS. It just happens to be that he found these vulnerabilities in this firmware for this chipset and used the GSM network to get it. And you know, so he also seems to be a winner from last year's Pwn to Own. So
yeah,
this is not the first time. So.
And he mentions Chris Paget's, cell phone. GSM hacking at last year's DEF CON in July, and he says that his attack is more malicious, and he could break the phone.
Yeah.
And actually take it over with this attack. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, thinking about, you know, in the U.S. we've got Verizon and Sprint, but you know, worldwide, I think it's something like 80% of phones in the world are GSM or something like that.
Pretty much, if you're outside the U.S., you are pretty much a GSM phone. We have two networks. Right. We have two or three networks that are CDMA, and for once, I'm happy to be on CDMA.
Right. So I'm on GSM myself, but I don't mention BlackBerry in this article. But if it's due to GSM,
no one carries BlackBerries anymore to break them. So I think I think you've reached the point where no one cares about
security
BlackBerry's
through obscurity. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed most people don't even mention it when they mention smartphones these days.
Well, there is Tyler Davis's stuff that he talked about at ShmooCon last year about using his BlackBerry as a personal bug, being able to phone calls and stuff, and do GPS coordinates down to 3 feet. So,
yeah. So far, I haven't found anything or very much that other people can do that I can't. And mm-hmm. you know, I can write my own apps for it just fine. So, yeah. You know, y'all have fun with your iPhones and other toys. So, but yeah, it's you know, it seems like every couple months now, they're coming out with something else that's, you know, showing vulnerabilities in GSM. And, you know, switching to 3G, we do have the better encryption on 3G, but it's still a proprietary encryption. And I'm just wondering how long, if ever, it's going to be before we get something really secure there. So
yeah, and GSM is, like, altogether better. Because, I mean, all you have to do is switch SIMs out. It's not hardware locked, you know.
Right.
So, you know,
You can switch carriers without flashing the firmware, so.
Yeah, that's, I would really like for the group behind GSM, I think it is GSM that's behind it, but I don't remember what their name is, but I really hope that they fix their stuff, because I really like GSM better, because, well, I would like to be able to go to Europe and put a new SIM into my phone and not have to buy a new phone, you know.
Yeah, the nice thing is that, I mean, there is software out there that will let you, you know, there are apps for all the different phones that will let you do encrypted text messages and encrypted voice on top of the encryption that's within GSM. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is that you have to be calling somebody else who can do that.
Yeah.
So
Android has a Red Phone and TechSecure by Whisper Systems, whose most famous member is Moxie Marlinspike. And I actually talked to him about it at Bay Threat, which is a local conference first year here. He came in and did some talks about what do you call it? It was cute and fluffy, something or other, I can't remember. But it was a pretty cool talk, and it was talking about, you know, the no network effect and stuff, but that's the same problem. It's like you can have the most secure phone where it's like encrypted down to the firmware, but if you can't call somebody else with that same phone, it's useless. So, you know, it's to have security, you have to have it on every phone, or else it's worthless. Because I have an encrypted phone, but you don't have an encrypted phone, and I can't talk to you. And, or if I do, it's unencrypted.
Right. Even if there's a you know, I was just trying to think of ways you could get around that. One of the ways I was thinking of was if you have a server in the middle that the phone call goes through so that you're encrypted to the server, you know, like an encrypted proxy type thing, it's still encrypted going to them. So if, you know, the person you're talking to is bugged and they're not encrypted, then, you know, what's the point of having that encryption that far, you know?
Yeah.
Wi-Fi encryption only gets you to your router. It doesn't get you out into the internet. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's you know, we're starting to get a little long in time. Let's go ahead and hit this next story.
Cool.
So,
I'll
grab this one. So this next story is talking about botnets. One of my all-time favorite topics, because typically some interesting stuff. Researchers are saying that Wallodak is back and has a new push, and the Rustock botnet is pumping spam again as well. So this article is on dark reading and in their insider threat section, and it's just basically saying that they're not really expecting anything new. Joe Stewart from SecureWorks is saying, but the botnets are all coming back, and with Zeus, that toolkit that on botnet, it's real easy to do. So it's getting a lot more common to find botnets.
Yeah.
And they mentioned the different ways that the command and control happens, and that's always what's been interesting to me, is seeing how that's changed. We used to see where it would all be from a server, and then it was done on IRC, and now a lot of it's going to social networks like Twitter. So
yeah, Robin Wood showed how you were able to do a command and control via Twitter, and he actually did the talk at ShrewCon last year, and
right.
you can tell what's on my mind.
Right. Yes. we'll get to that. So.
But he did a talk, and like a week after, there was some unique traffic coming out of Twitter that actually eventually got blocked. But it looked like someone was using his proof of concept to actually run a small botnet. And
right. I remember reading that story. So
yeah, it was very interesting. He said that it's a very similar idea, but it was not his proof of concept, because he said his proof of concept was very, very crippled on purpose. And so,
right.
So someone looked at his code and wrote it, rewrote it, or fixed it. And but being Twitter, saw this and jumped on it. And I guess it's probably still happening because, well, you can't stop all the spam or all the stuff, but they are staying
right
on top of it. But it was very interesting. He was able to in the example he was able to use a Twitter to grab the SAM file, the SAM file from a Windows server, and then and then mail it to himself, and so he was able to get the list of admin passwords on his example server. It was pretty cool. But yeah, CNCs are always the fun part.
Right. It's just interesting seeing all the different ways botnet operators figure things out. But speaking of botnets, it's not exactly a botnet, but what do you think of the kind of volunteer botnet that Anonymous is doing?
The Loik.
Yeah, low orbit ion cannon.
Yeah.
So have you done any looking into that?
The one time I looked into the actual tool they're actually using was someone wrote a mobile version, and I was sitting on a light rail going to or from work, and so I pulled it up on my phone and just threw it at my server, and all it did was sit there and try to make requests on the behalf of my phone, and all it did was just send. It didn't work. It just, like, 775 packets sent, none sent back, no packets back or whatever. But yeah, it was. I just chalked it up to 4chan users not being the greatest developers. But
we don't want to diss them too bad, or else they'll take down our podcast. But
the great words that my that Jeremiah Grossman said, don't poke the bear.
Right.
We're not going to call ourselves unhackable. We're not stupid. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I was kind of for them when they were doing stuff like copyrights and the trolls that were,
right.
But
when they started, when they were taking down like Scientology, things like that.
That was actually like I can see the benefit of the site not being up for a few hours, but just
right.
But to hit stuff like
MasterCard and Visa and
PayPal. Where I've had this discussion with my roommate, but they could have legal threats against the U.S. And so they decided to avoid the problem by stopping it. And so for some reason, 4chan saw this as a bad thing and attacked them. So, but
right.
I find it interesting. It's definitely different. They're not using a botnet. They are, but it's a volunteer botnet. So it's very interesting.
It's something I haven't I haven't really seen before. I mean, that's not to say it hasn't happened on a smaller scale, but I haven't seen it. I haven't really seen it done before, where people have volunteered to install something on their computer that would be malicious. So
there's, I don't know if you heard it, but the Jester.
I follow the Jester on Twitter. I enjoy his talking about Anonymous and the like. So
yeah, there was something I think he posted, and I got a retweet of it. Maybe it was from you, but where he the new software that they were using was posted on a bunch of forums, and the source was available in the download. So he took the source and added some stuff that made him less anonymous, and then recompiled it and changed the version number, and then re-uploaded it to the new forums and said it was a bug fix, and everyone downloaded it, and it basically had a backdoor that gave out all the information that they were apparently keeping secure via Tor, and just like put it in the access logs, or just didn't take it through Tor so people could sites could track it back. People just downloaded it without thinking or doing a checksum on it or anything. It was pretty nice. Interesting. He was very happy about that.
Well, why don't we move on to our next section, and then we'll. So, if you want to talk about your stuff, so.
Sure. We're gonna talk about cons that are coming up, and the first one, which is next week, the 28th to the 30th, is ShmooCon 2011, the con with less moose. But the ShmooCon sells itself as being different, affordable, and accessible, and of course entertaining, which it always has been. This is my second year. It's a smaller con. I've heard it explained to be like the East Coast DEF CON, but smaller. They have a limited lottery system based ticketing system, so that's probably why you've probably heard it before if you're in information security. But it should be interesting. They've went to the ways of normally lots of speakers are the same that are everywhere, but this year they seem to have grabbed a bunch of new people. I have recognized three or four names on a list of three tracks with like seven talks a day. So it's a lot of talks. Johnny Long will be coming in from where is he again? He's in Africa.
I don't remember where he is. So
he's flying in from Africa, wherever he is. I can't remember. I'm sorry, Johnny. I know
it's somewhere in Africa. So.
Yeah, but he's coming in to do a talk and see ShmooCon, and then Mudge from the Loft Group is doing a keynote on Friday night. So that'll be interesting. But there's not very many talks, and it's very mobile themed here. There's talks about attacking the 3G and 4G networks, and I just saw something. Of course, I lose it though as soon as I need to talk about it. But malicious USB drives, devices from Iron Geek. So it looks like it's gonna be fun. I will go there and be happy and come back and report. I will actually go to I will actually go to the talks, since I will have someone to talk to afterwards about it. But
I'm a fan of Iron Geek's talks. His one of the highlights of my con going is hanging out with Iron Geek. So
yeah, Iron Geek is a very interesting guy. I like him. He's a lot of fun and a very good speaker. He knows his stuff, and it's just like pure data.
I can second your being excited about ShmooCon, because that's all you've been talking about during and before the podcast.
Yeah. As far as I know, it should be live streamed, as long as we don't have snowpocalypse like we did last year, where we tried to do live streaming and it just died as soon as it hit the outside. You know, inside it had zero packet loss, and then as soon as it hit the outside ISP connection, we lost tons of packets, so the connection was very bad. But
did you ever get in contact with Who was it? Was it Matthew? Who was it that was talking for interested in contacting podcasters at Shmoo?
Oh, that was H&N.
That's right.
Yeah, I talked to Space Rogue, and they were going to do a meet the podcasters, and I decided that we didn't qualify since we were going to have one blog post right before, but not blog post, one podcast out before, but it should be interesting. I'm not sure if we should talk about that actually, because he told me.
If
that
nothing else, he did make the open call out for
it.
This
is true, yeah. But it should be yeah.
If nothing else, maybe we might try and do a ShmooCon special while you're there.
So. Sure. There will be plenty of bandwidth, and I will have an SSH server running.
All right.
The other two cons. This will be shorter because I don't know as much about one of them, is the RSA conference, which is Business Security Conference. There's lots of buzzwords, so I'm going to skip through the about page. But it's definitely the CEOs and COOs conference for security, but it's where everyone, all the vendors and all the people come out and sell their stuff and do it. Apparently there's good parties there. I don't know. I'm not a partier. But the good thing is that there will be a B-side San Francisco the first 2 days, Monday and Tuesday during it. And I would like to thank the sponsors since it is free. And, you know, the sponsors are always good. I'm not going to read them off, but we'll put a link in the show notes. But they are cool and... I thank them very much. The schedule is not up since that is in February, but there is a very good list of talks that will be voted upon or has been voted upon. But it will be, voting has closed. I didn't vote, darn. But there's a good set of...
I think a lot of people that weren't going voted. So.
Yeah, because they live stream everything, so you'll be able to see the talk even if you're not here. So, but it will be... it should be a very cool talk with no vendors, no one trying to sell you anything, just information, friends, and community. It should be very cool. So, yeah, those are the three cons that I will be, two of the cons I will be going to, and three that are happening where I will be. So, I think you've got two more.
Well, I do. The first I'll talk about is Indiana Linux Fest. It'll be March 15th through 17th in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Wyndham Indianapolis West Hotel. It's just on their About Us page. It's a conference put on by the Indiana Free and Open Source Software Society. It's about community information and friends. They strive to bring the FOSS community together for more information gathering. We want a place for people to network, communicate, and have a good time. And I will be at the Indiana Linux Fest. From what I've been told, it's going to be a lot like Southeast Linux Fest or Ohio Linux Fest. And they've got quite a few big spots already. There isn't really any information about who the speakers are going to be besides the opening and closing speakers. First will be Taurus Baylog, hope I'm pronouncing that right, from opennms.org, and talking about why we can't all get along and why this is a good thing. And then their closing talk will be Bradley Kuhn, the executive director of the Software Freedom Conservancy, and the talk will be Software Freedom Conservancy, Nonprofit Infrastructure for FLOSS. So I think it's going to be an interesting conference. It'll be my first time going to something that's not a true social con. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of interested to see, you know, how a little bit more professionally done this is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
and it'll probably be the biggest con I've been to.
This looks very cool. I wish I was in Indiana.
Yeah, we'll have to, maybe we can get some sponsors who can pay for us to fly around and go to stuff.
Well, if there's a sponsor that wants to fly me to Indiana so I can be at Indiana Linux Fest, I would be okay with that completely.
All right. Well, you heard it here. That's a call out. If you're willing to pay for a flight from California to Indiana so that he can go see the conference,
we'll do a live show. Not live show, but a together show. We'll record together. No Skype.
Yep. But we could do it live too. So.
Yeah, this is true. This isn't a security con. They won't be stealing our credentials as we log on. This is true. Well, maybe.
Right. So.
We'll be there.
I will still be SSH. So. But yeah, they might have to fear a little bit with us there.
Two security people at the same conference. Oh no.
The other conference I want to talk about is Outer Zone 7? I haven't heard any information about Outer Zone this year. I've tried contacting Skydog to get some information, but Skydog has been completely incommunicado with me, so no idea what's going on. Their website's still set up for Outer Zone 6, but that doesn't surprise me because last year it didn't get changed until about a week and a half before the con. So whether or not it's happening, I don't know. If it does happen, it will be towards the end of March in Atlanta. I'm hoping it is not the same weekend as Indiana Linux Fest, because I would like to go to both, and I think you said you might be able to go to it, depending on the date.
Yeah, depending on the date and money and that kind of thing. So, but yeah.
Right. So, if you know anything about Outer Zone, contact us. We'd like some information. This means you, Skydog. We want to go. So I went to Outer Zone here and I had a blast. So.
Yeah, it looks interesting from the guy sitting at the desk. On the website.
That's Skydog in his office. So, Skydog's great. Iron Geek was there. I had a bunch of fun hanging out with all the guys from Huntsville, Makers Local, things like that. So I love Outer Zone, Freaknik. Those are two big things that I try and make it to. I've done Freaknik twice now and loved every minute of it. That's what got me addicted to cons.
Got to hang out with Dual Care, as we've discussed, you and your epic gear.
Yes, there are pictures of me on Flickr in a photo booth with Int 80 from Dual Core. So cons are fun, and that's all I have to say on that. Closing.
Closing. We got to end this eventually, I guess.
I have no idea how long we've been recording because I have no idea, but probably longer than we planned on recording.
Yeah.
But this first episode has been fun. Sorry if it's a little rough. We'll be a little bit more prepared from now on. Our goal is to have one, how often do we think?
I thought we said monthly as of right now.
Okay, so right now we're going to be doing it monthly. Do you have anything you want to say?
Not that I can think of. Thanks for listening. We're sorry that it's a little rough. Like we said, we'll make it better. And if you have any comments, questions, feel free to email us. If you feel like sponsoring us, email us. We have no problem with sponsorships. If you have something...
Let's see, we should probably get some contact info.
Yes, contact info would be good. I am on Twitter as BioShadow. Feel free to at me or DM me if you follow me or want to DM me. You can also email me at bioshadow@bioshadow.com. Send the emails for the
web. All right. And I am Sporus. You can find me at JMStitt, STITT, on Twitter. And that's probably the best place to get in touch with me, or you can email me at sporus.cs@gmail.com. And hopefully we'll get a domain name sometime soon, and we'll set up an official podcast email. That'll probably be later on in the year. But contact us if you have anything you want us to talk about. If you want to be interviewed on the show, we're looking to do that.
Yep.
If you want to pay for one of us to fly to a conference, so.
Yeah. That works too.
So the only other thing that we have on our list is witty banter. Do you have any witty banter?
No, I don't have witty banter. I am not known for my wittiness.
All right.
I'm actually known for nothing. So.
What about your roommate?
My roommate
is...
up
for any witty banter?
No, my roommate is not up for witty banter. I'm not giving him that option. He tried to get... He tried to say that he was going to sponsor us for a conference, plane and hotel, and it turned out to be the... what is it? What is it called? The Rocket City Fur Meet in Huntsville, Alabama, where he is from Alabama and I live there. So there's a little running joke there because, well, in downtown San Jose this weekend there was a furry convention. So everyone was furried up and there was restaurants offering free drinks for furries. It was quite interesting.
I would like to go spend some time in Huntsville, but not at the furry con. So.
Yeah. I have no interest in going to a furry con.
I guess that's all we have for this week. So I'm Sporus, and we'll be signing out. So.
Yeah. Thanks. Sorry for the roommate. He forgot that Skype records. Anywho, we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.